welcome to Live Courageously podcast show, episode number 86. I'm your host, John Duffy, and Live Courageously has been the conscious theme of my life for the last 3 years since the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, and it's been an unconscious theme for most of my life. Now more than ever, the message of living courageously and rejecting the messages of fear that's promoted daily in the media is needed. Courage is resistance to fear, mastery of fear, not the absence of fear. There's something contagious about someone who is courageous. So today's show is my courageous Bronx brother and producing partner, guest James Quattrochi, and for nearly three decades, the genial and gregarious, wow, New Yorker, James Quattrochi, has pursued a career in the film industry on both sides of the camera. After moving to Los Angeles in 1991, he produced and starred in The Kingdom of the Blind, which achieved critical acclaim at the Palm Springs and Santa Barbara film festivals. He then produced and directed Through Friends, winning the Charleston International Film Festival and being voted Best Up-and-Coming Director by the LAFA Film Awards, and he earned him a letter of endorsement from Martin Scorsese. James followed this promising start with work on several more projects in various roles as a producer, a director, and an actor, having worked with many heavyweights in the industry, such as Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Sylvester Stallone, Tom Selleck, Kevin Sorbo, Paul Winfield, Michael Biehn, William Peterson, Stanley Keach, Olympia Dukakis, William Forsythe, Charles Durning, and Lou Gossett Jr., to just name a few. He's established himself as a well-respected actor, producer, and director with such notable films of All In, Sound of Freedom, The Nail, The Story of Joey Nardone, Tulsa King, Blue Bloods, and Disney's The Prince and the Pauper, starring the Sprouse twins, Cole and Dylan. His company, Second Generation Film, has recently added a TV division, expanding the scope of projects and selection. And more recently, he acted in a project with Dwayne The Rock Johnson in Jungle Cruise, and also just recently on Tulsa with, what's his name, Sylvester Stallone. So let's welcome to the stage my good brother, James Quattrochi. Welcome, brother. Thank you for joining me, man.
John, I never sounded so important before. That was awesome.
Hey, now, but I got a question. Usually I have two questions, but I got a third question because genial and gregarious.
You know who wrote that for me? Was Sam Sorbo. Oh, Sam wrote God. That.
Hey, pay her more. I don't believe it. But hey. Yeah.
I had to look it up in a dictionary. I didn't even know what it meant.
I was like, okay, I'm going to stumble on saying this one, especially the gregarious part.
By the way, it's Sylvester Stallone.
What did I say?
His name.
I butchered his name.
Tulsa King.
Tulsa King, yes. So my two questions, now that we got past the gregarious part, is the first one is, how did we meet? That's always what I like to ask people and get an idea about how did we come together. So why don't you tell us how that happened?
Am I allowed to tell the true story?
You know, we'll debate it. We may have to bring in lawyers, but yeah, go ahead, man. It's on you.
I was in New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico. I booked a role. It was the second time I worked for producer Ronnie Clemmer, a mutual friend of John's and mine. And Ronnie, great guy, did the ABC movie of the week, The Stranger Beside Me, with Sandor Stern was the director. So Ronnie books me on a movie in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I believe Tom Wright was the director. Am I correct, John?
That is correct.
Yeah, and I played with Dennis Hopper. I played his rookie prison guard. And it was a great show. You know, I had a great role. I was there for 3 weeks or so. Santa Fe, New Mexico was beautiful. And some guy named John Duffy was a line producer on the movie. And naturally, he was over budget and over script. And probably one of the most pivotal scenes of the entire movie was mine, where I have to go get the prisoner and walk him to death row, which, as you know, or maybe don't know, it's a difficult task for a prison guard, especially a rookie prison guard, and, of course, the prisoner. And getting ready to do the scene, and John comes up to me in the morning and introduces himself and basically says, we got a little problem. We got to do some cuts here and there. We're cutting the scene. So I looked at him and I said, well, you can't do that. I said, because You know, it's a pivotal scene. It's an emotional scene, and it's an extremely moving scene. And his one answer to me was, "You're right. It's moving right off the schedule." They cut the scene.
And if you this is not true, people. But hey, this is his memory. He has memory issues. But do you remember the name of the movie?
Unspeakable.
Right. So I was just trying to make sure that you
make
were
me unspeakable. There you go. Cut my lines. So that's why, John. How long ago was that? 30 years ago?
Oh God, not that many. Please.
Oh, and we carry that with us, and we've done countless movies together, and we have projects in development together, and we laugh about that all the time. And
yes, we do. And every time you tell the story, and today he's being very polite, because normally when he tells the story, he cries. You know, we're in a bar drinking wine with the whole crew, and he makes everybody cry. So it's always a performance that I love to see. So
I'm an actor.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. The second question, and then I want to get into your background and, you know, your journey from the Bronx to Hollywood. But what does Live Courageously mean to you? Because you've lived a very adventurous and courageous life.
You know, I posted something today. Do what you believe is right, even if you have to stand alone.
Mm.
And not everybody's going to agree with you. Have the courage to love your friends and your family. Have the courage to live your life speaking the truth, what you believe in your heart, in your soul. And don't make any excuses for it. Because there's so many people out there that will just waiting for the chance to argue with you and knock you down. So I try to live courageously. And sure, I stumble every day. I mean, I think a lot of us do. But then I courageously pick myself up and continue moving forward.
Well, that's a real good answer, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think something for us to take to heart. You know, let's go back. I mean, you started out your journey back in the Bronx, like myself, we're both Bronx kids. And, you know, you started from there. Tell us a little bit about your background, your history, you know, before that led you up to the acting journey that you went on.
Well, I come from humble beginnings. My father owned a hardware store in the Bronx before there was Home Depot and the rest of the big chains. You know, he had a hardware store and the whole family worked there. I mean, my grandmother still lived in the Bronx. My grandfather still lived in the Bronx, aunts, uncles, everybody. My cousin worked along with the rest of us in the store. And we had it for so many years, as long as I can remember. Being in grammar school and summer camp and high school, I was always very involved in theater and doing a lot of plays. But then, you know, I lost it for a while and I got into business. We moved to Westchester, White Plains. Beautiful house, beautiful friends. We knew everybody for 3 square miles, which I think is lost today. I mean, there's really no neighborhoods anymore. You came from a neighborhood, you knew everybody. I knew everybody in the neighborhood. And literally, if I did something wrong a mile away, by the time I got home, my mom smacked me when I walked through the door because she already got a phone call. She already knew. Everybody knew who I was. We knew everybody. But it was beautiful. I mean, so many friends. You wanted to play football or baseball, you just walk outside, call it out, and everybody comes outside and you're playing. You know. So after a while, getting into business, going through a divorce at the age of 27, 28, my mom, actually, I have to blame her for this whole thing. Rest her soul. I love her. She was my age. Mom, dad were my best friends. They were married 60 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Loved each other so much. It was beautiful. She found an article. They were looking for extras in Ghostbusters Part 2. It was kind of a scam because you had to go down and spend $250 and get a headshot. But the guy actually booked me as a background, as an extra in Ghostbusters Part 2. I went with my brother, Tony. It was 10 degrees below zero on 57th Street, Manhattan. I thought it was the greatest thing since penicillin. He hated it. And here I am talking to you. That was 1987.
Well, just to get a little bit in more into your background, we have a friend that I know personally and you know online, also from New York, Sonny G. And he is Italian, who is a horse trainer, trains people in every aspect of horse riding back in New York. Great guy. But he, you know, he said, you know, he's like, he always sees you posting stuff of drinking a glass of red wine, having some pasta, and always just wanted to know more about your Italian heritage, because he's Italian and he just figured up, you know, what's that about? How does that, your pride in being Italian, all that? He also said it was hard on you because you got to sit next to an Irish thug like me. So,
well, John, I mean, as you know, when we work together and we usually stay in the same condo, you know, I cook you dinner and I always open up a bottle of wine and we talk about the next day together, right? And we get a lot of work done and, you know, same thing on our days off. I grew up in a household between my grandmother's house. It was always something on the stove. My mom, always something on the stove. Mom cooked every day. Grandma cooked for everybody every day. Every Sunday, we had 25, 30 people over the house and more during the holidays. So that's in me. Family, friends, food. I think it's definitely a European-Italian thing. We come together. We talk. We love. We eat. And we drink red wine. My grandfather made red wine. I made red wine for 5 or 6 years. So, Sonny, that's where it comes from. It makes me feel good. It brings me back to my heritage. It brings me back to my childhood and growing up. And it's that simple. I love pasta. I love sauce. I love cooking. John will tell you I love cooking, and I love a good red Cabernet.
Yeah. And we've shared many of them, and we'll talk about some of the movies we did together, but, you know, what is something or maybe one or two things that no one only, or when I say no one, most people don't know about you that you've done in your life?
Wow. What I've done. One thing people, one simple thing people don't know is I was very dyslexic growing up. Huh. Where the point was like they had to send me to special schools. Being called stupid growing up, it sinks in. Kids are mean. Mm. There's a lot of that going on that needs to change. I attempted to go to college, which I did. I got an associate's degree, went for 2 years. And most people doubted the fact that A, I would graduate, and B, I would pass a 600 question New York State test where you had to get an 80 or above. I had to lock myself in a library every night to study for 2-3 hours. I could not have any noise. And I had to teach a different part of my brain how to absorb and memorize. Now, when I did Young and the Restless, I had 25 pages of dialogue a day and I memorized it. But back then, it was very hard for me to do that. So somehow I was able to teach myself and relearn how to memorize. And graduated, passed the 600 question New York State test, and then, you know, started opening up businesses. You know, I had a dry cleaner, a fitness center. I started a tanning salon. I had a live blues and jazz club. And I just keep, you know, a construction company. I just keep opening up businesses and selling them and building houses. And I think college and graduating and passing that test was a test for me to prove to myself I could do anything I want to do if I put my mind to it. So if there's anybody listening now, trust me, I am the litmus test. If I could do it, anyone can do it.
Well, it's kind of funny because all those businesses, like you said, the club you had in the Village was a very successful club, music club for years. You know, so you had this whole entrepreneurial thing that you did. And then, you know, with the fitness club you opened up, it was pretty wild because your club was not too far away from where I worked for Jack LaLanne as a fitness instructor. But we didn't meet there. We didn't meet and know about that until later with a co-friend of ours who was my manager at Jack LaLanne that we knew, Nick Stellati, who is a bodybuilder and everything. And years later, the three of us, all of us were in the fitness industry in New York. And now we're out here and we're in the film industry and from the Bronx guys. And so it's funny how life turned out that way. But you also did something else that I know about that's unique, that, I mean, is kind of a very amazing thing, which you know what I'm talking about, right? The other business that you did. You know, Italian, you know, you're always trying to kill me, that kind of thing, you know?
I think what he's talking about is my degree, that 600 question state test was, I became a New York State funeral director.
Right.
And what I love, listen, Italian is very emotional. Make no bones about
really?
It.
Really? Really? Yeah,
I'm sending guys over your house right now, just so you know.
They're sleeping outside in the car. I woke them up.
Black car. You see a black car, duck. So what I loved about it the most was I got a chance to work with the families and make a very difficult time in their lives, rightfully so, go as smooth as possible. I don't care if it was ordering food for the house, more flowers, the limousines, pick somebody up, drop somebody off, whatever it would be, you know, I was there for them. We studied grief psychology, right, in school, and we were there to comfort. It's a hard time. I know most people listening have lost a loved one, I'm sure, and it's very, very difficult. I was able to take that skill and apply it towards my own family when we lost loved ones in recent times. So I still hold that little badge and the work I did in that business very close to my heart, and very proud of the work I did back in the day.
Well, you know, I know hanging with you and working on the movies up in Canada, we spent a lot of time talking, you know, at night. And just hearing all those things, just the amount of different things you've done. And I think that's like a message to people that you can, no matter what you're doing, you can keep moving in different directions. You don't have to get stuck. You did that, but then you moved on again, and then you found new passions, and then you pursued acting, and then you pursued directing and producing. So all those things, you had all this adventurous background and a very diverse background, but you kept pursuing your dreams. You kept pursuing your passions. And that, I think, is a powerful message that I know who you are, that's who you are. So take us on the journey into your passion. So you went into acting and start sharing some of those stories and maybe some of the acting highlights of your life that you are maybe the favorite things that you've done in acting and you continue to do, because that's a big part of who you are today.
Well, thank you. Yeah, in lieu of joining the circus, I've done a lot of stuff, right? I think I was able to take, you know, my past and studying with Strasberg, studying Meisner and the different techniques that I started studying in New York, using the sense memory, using the tragedies, using the good times and the feeling and all that sense memory as an actor. So I started studying. I was studying with Joy Todd. She was a casting director in New York. Mervyn Nelson was a incredible acting coach in New York at the Kaufman Theater on 42nd and 10th. After a while, Joy Todd said to me, baby, you need to go to the entertainment capital of the world, move to California. I just sold a nightclub. I packed a U-Haul and drove out to L.A. I went to the Sunset Palms Motel. I'll never forget it. If you remember the movie Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi.
Uh-huh.
Pat, I forgot his last name. He played Mr. Miyagi. Great actor. I'm sorry, I forgot his last name. I stayed there for two or three nights, and it was definitely an adventure learning. It was not what I saw in I Love Lucy growing up. California. That was for sure. Some of the highlights real quick, but I want to get back to Sunset Palms at the end of this story. Remind me if I segue somewhere different. Growing up in New York as an actor later on in life, Sonny Grasso from the French Connection used to take us in Little Italy to a restaurant called Cafe Puglia. And on Tuesday nights, we all got together and Frankie Gio would get up and sing, and Tony Lip would come from Green Book, Nick Vallelonga's father, who I adore and got to know so well. And Nick and I produced many movies together, and we have a movie now going on at Warner Brothers, and you're included in that, you know, because you're part of the team up at WB with us. We had a great meeting on Monday. Very excited about that. And Charlie Durning had just won the Tony for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with Kathleen Turner. And Sonny Grasso said, Charlie, I want you to meet the kid, James. And he shook my hand. He looked at me. He said, you got a good look, kid. Don't let him knock you out of the box. Like, I spent like 15 years. What does that mean? Don't let him knock you out of the box. Guy won a Tony Award. And he looks at me and says, don't let him knock you out of the box. Well, 2002, I was blessed enough to direct my second movie called Jesus, Mary, and Joey up in Rhode Island. And the casting director hired Charlie Durning to play this all-knowing New York bartender. So if you know New York City and you know a bartender who's bartended his whole life, he has seen life walk through. You could walk in that bar, he look at your face, he'll tell you your whole life story. And that was the kind of character that he was. So he does his first take and he comes up to me and he says, do you have anything to say to me? He was asking like for direction, you know, what I thought. And I said, yeah, Charlie, I didn't let him knock me out of the box. And he looked at me confused. And I said, Cafe Puglia with Sonny Grasso. And you know something, John? You know what he said to me? You were the kid. You were the kid. I said, yeah, Charlie, I was the kid. So that, I mean, in life, that makes full circle. How can you top that? One other quick story, and then I'm going to go back to Sunset Palms. When I wrote True Friends, which so I did Kingdom of the Blind with Nick Vallelonga, my second movie was True Friends. We wrote it in 2 weeks. And when I typed in Fade to Black, I can't really explain. It was an energy that came over me and my body, and I broke down crying, and I didn't know why. I had no idea why. And I wrote it like on a Canon Star Rider with a floppy disk. Remember, floppy disk was horrible. And I heard this voice in my head. It was clear as day. It said, you have to direct this movie. Now, I didn't know back then that it was starting my directing career. But I said to my writing partner, when he asked, so you, why are you crying? Are you okay? I said, no, I'm okay. But I have to direct this movie. And he said, what do you know about directing? Nothing. But I know I have to direct this movie. And I did, and won all kinds of awards for it. It was a great little movie called True Friends. So we put it in the theaters, and we were actually promoting the movie at the theaters with flyers. And it did very well. I mean, it was in the theaters for almost a year. We would jockey 6 35 millimeter prints around California to the different AMC movie theaters so they would play it. And they paid us. A year. Name a movie this today that stays in the theaters for a year.
No kidding.
2 weeks, you're lucky. So I was in a Rite Aid back in the day. We had film. We put on our cameras and we took pictures. And this young lady came up to me and she, this was the first time anybody really recognized me as an actor. It was 1998, early in my career. And she said, you're the guy from True Friends. So of course, you know, that's right. You know, I'm the guy from True Friends. And she said, I just have to tell you something. Your story, your movie, I saw it. I was so touched. It's about friendship and true friendship. And I hadn't talked to my roommate in several years from college, but because of you, we're having lunch next week. And I just wanted to thank you. She gave me a hug. And I went in my car. And once again, I broke down and I started crying. So that journey from writing the script to that young lady, I realized something that what you do and I do and the rest of the artists in this world, whether they paint, make music, sculptures, you know, you name it, artist, writer, whatever, actor, we don't do it for ourselves. We do it to change people's lives, make them feel emotion, give them joy, love, happiness, you name it. So I started a movie called The Gambler. And they were having a premiere on Sunset Boulevard last year. I took an Uber there because I don't like to go. And if I have a cocktail or two and it's Hollywood and then I don't want to drive, took an Uber there and the Uber brought me around the back. And I went in through the back. And the movie was great. Everybody, you know, loved it. And we had a nice after dinner, after movie party and a lot of accolades and got to meet some great people. My agent was there. And when I walked out the front, do you know what I saw? The Sunset Palms Motel that I spent my first night at. So I had to catch my breath. And here was a motel for like $20 a night that I stayed in for a few days. The first day I came to Hollywood. And there was a movie I'm starring in. So that was, for me, I mean, that was an incredible night.
I bet it was, man. And, you know, it's funny how those moments, you know, touch you. I know for myself, the first movie I ever acted in, I played a hired killer. And we always goof because I have a picture with me with the gun, and you always make fun of it because you say,
I have that somewhere.
Better have it. But anyway, you know, it was the first movie I ever acted in. And then, oh no, it was even right before that. I take it back. And I'm walking on Fordham Road. And you remember back in the days, they had VHS. It was VHS copies, right? And it was, I played this bad guy who kills his, tries to, you know, abuse his wife, and she shoots me with a shotgun and she kills me, right? So I'm walking on Fordham Road, and this, you know, guy who's bootlegging VHS has got a movie.
Yeah, it's got your movie? Hold on,
bro. I didn't even know. And so I see this movie, and I go, hey, that's the movie I was in. I turn it around. My picture's on the VHS. I'm like, oh, my God.
You bought every copy the guy had. I know you.
I told that guy, where did you get this? You know, why would you even bootleg this, man? But
yeah, I'm looking for your picture right now. I got it somewhere. But I have to tell a story to everybody about your picture.
Of course. So
you have it. Show everybody the picture.
All right. Here you go. Right.
That's the picture. Now, look at that picture. You can't forget that picture.
You can't, man.
Every time we were casting a movie, we got about 400 of those in the mail. John Cimino as an actor. Now, I had no idea who this guy was. I don't recognize that picture with the man I'm talking to right now. We're in Canada doing Miracle in East Texas. And I walk in, we shared an office, and I walk into the office, and on the door is that picture. I go, John, did you hang? Who's this guy? John says, that was me. John, I couldn't believe it that once again, life made full circle. 20 some odd years later, the guy that mailed me, we had your picture all over the walls. Like, well, we were throwing darts at it.
This is so.
That's what maybe we would get in the mail.
If you need somebody to write fiction for you, he's the guy. Because that's another great story, but it's not true. But it's
it is. Why does everything I say to you not true?
Because it's not just even that movie. You were playing a prison guard in the movie, but that was that you weren't being typecast because you should have been playing the prisoner. You shouldn't have been playing the guard, right?
I would have felt more comfortable.
But yeah, we've gone full circle, and it's funny how you know, you realize that life, like you, that we ended up from the Bronx connecting and being, you know, brothers and being producing partners together. And that movie, tell that movie about, that was the first time we worked together producing up in Calgary, Canada in Miracle in East Texas. Tell that story, because it was a great movie, a great experience, and boy, did we have a great time.
Well, John, when I work with John, it's always a great time. And hands down, one of the best line producers in this industry, period, end of conversation. And you make it fun, and everybody loves you, and you're the problem solver. You come from the Tony Robbins school of solving problems. Man, I was young there. Jesus.
Yeah, you were, man.
Look at that hair. Yeah, you do. You fix. You're Mr. Fix-It, and I really appreciate that. We got the budget from Kevin Sorbo, and we went over it here in my complex where I live. And John and I decided we could not do this movie for the money Kevin had. And then I was talking to a friend, Scott Jones, and Scott said to me, he said, Jamie, why don't you bring it to Canada? I go, why would I bring it to Canada? So back then, our dollar was worth $1.33. So we got a 33-cent bump on the dollar and a 30% rebate back on what we spent. So for an example, $1 million becomes like $3 million. $2 million becomes $5 million. So we were able to do it. We came in under budget, and we worked with Kevin Sorbo, Sam Sorbo. We worked with a co-writer and producer on the show, Dan Gordon, one of our heroes. Dan is a colonel in the Israeli army. And he's also a Canadian citizen and American citizen. And not too long ago, when he turned 69 or 70, He actually went back on the front line and fought with Israel at that age as a colonel in the Israeli army. He's an amazing man.
He was on one of my podcast shows in October, after October 7th, the massacre. I had him on my show, and he shared a lot of stories because, yeah, he is an amazing, brave human being.
Amazing. Yeah. Had a blast. It was summer. It was great weather. And we killed it. I mean, we made a great, great movie that is in distribution now. It was held up because of COVID for a little while, just like most movies were. But I had a blast, and I got to really realize how valuable John Duffy was on set, and, you know, as a producer, as a partner.
Well, thank you. I mean, you played, wore a lot of hats, obviously, in the movie, producing, second unit directing, acting, you know, and all the roles that you played helped bring that together. But it was such a great team because Kevin Sorbo is such a fantastic human being on every level, directing, acting, and he directed the movie and acted in the movie. And then the team that we put together up in Canada that we co-partnered with was also just an amazing group of people. And, you know, one of the things we all come from, and they didn't know us, we came from Hollywood. They thought we were going to be typical people. But, you know, we went up there and we basically turned everybody into our family, and we treated everybody great. And we just, you know, the whole crew, everybody, we just had such a great experience.
They're still our family. I mean, we consider them family. Actually, I know you remember this, but we had to go to the unions because we didn't have enough money. We had to ask for a pass.
Right.
And IOTC was the first one on board, and then the Teamsters, and we love those guys. We brought a second movie back there for a lot more money, and they looked us in the eyes. You know what? You guys held your word. You came back, and we came back, and we made Left Behind, The Rise of the Antichrist. And I actually just got a chance to work with Neil McDonough on Tulsa King, and he saw me, and he hugged me, a beautiful human being that he is. But with that said, the unions up there are incredible. And we had a blast, and there's Neil McDonough, and that we're on Tulsa King there. And I mean, what a great actor he is, boy. But yeah, we went back.
What a great human being he is as well. I mean, we had such a great time with him up there. I mean, the whole cast was just great, great human beings. I mean, all of them, it was just like, you know, we have a running joke. We have a lot of running jokes, if you haven't figured that out by now watching this. But, you know, one of the jokes was, I said to James on that one, I said, you know, I feel like I haven't worked a day at all on this film. And of course, what was your response?
You haven't.
So, and he's like, so we don't have to pay you, right?
Do you have the picture? Do you have the picture I took of you sleeping on set in the chair?
You know, I have a picture of you sleeping.
I know you do. You know, I want to do a shout out to Jason Juan Lim, Scott Jones, and the rest of our family friends up there in Calgary, Alberta. We love you guys. I think that was in my opinion, my favorite place ever to make a movie, because of the way we were treated and welcomed with love and open arms. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, I have to second it.
Just from the unions on down.
Yeah, no, we had we didn't have a lot of time. I mean, from the point of view, we had 3 weeks to prep this movie, and we had to start shooting. And and we had a lot of things. We had to build an oil guzzler, you know, out in the field. And we had a great team.
That was two movies in a row we had a short prep, if you remember. Both of them up there. We got to do a shout out to Stéphane Leroy, our French friend up there, who makes miracles happen. That kid can do anything.
Yeah, he was, and that was the thing. Everybody, there was just Stefan and Jason, and just what a great group of people. And you know, everybody became family, and it was that's the way you really, I think, you want to make movies and work in this. That's the second one with Kevin Sorbo for me. Your third, and you also did Let There Be Light. That was your first one down in Alabama that you did with him. In Mobile. So you produced three, I produced two with him, and we're hopefully going to do some more in the future with him and Sam Sorbo, because they're great people to work with and got great projects. So that was a blessing for me to be part of that.
Sam calls you and I her secret weapon.
Oh, that's
great.
Cool.
She's a great producer. She's very hands-on. She knows everything that's going on.
And her scene, matter of fact, which I wanted to see if I can throw up a quick picture of you. Once again, I mean, you keep getting these roles. I don't know if I have the role. Here you go. This is you as the sheriff in America in East Texas. And, you know, what a great role.
What a handsome sheriff, boy.
Well, you know, I mean, my biggest regret was I didn't get to cut your lines in that movie. But you did a fantastic job. And Sam Sorbo's performance was fantastic. And we just had so much fun in the making of the movie, you know, and it comes across in watching it. It's really a cool, fun movie based on a true story about the biggest oil find in the history of America in Texas. So, what a cool movie.
Very cool. And then, you know, I've been blessed, man. I have a great team of agents and managers and promoters. And I every day I say, while I'm blessed, like today I had two auditions just today. Some of my friends tell me they've had two auditions all year. Last week, I think I had seven.
Wow.
So my team, I'm so blessed to have my team, and I pay everybody. Everybody gets paid. I don't hold back any money. I keep a lot less because I pay the whole team, even though if they haven't got me to roll, if one of the team members hadn't worked on that project, doesn't matter. I pay them. But in this summer, within a week's time, I booked Blue Bloods, and I had the honor of going to Brooklyn and working with Tom Selleck on the very final episode of Blue Bloods, which was an honor for me, just an honor for me. Season 14, the very last episode. And I worked with Edward James Olmos on the show, Eddie Olmos, and his Tom. And to watch Tom work, how he runs this set, because he's one of the executive producers and he's the star of the show, obviously. He plays Commissioner Reagan. When I was in my hotel room packing, my agent called me. She says, "You're not going back to LA. You're going to Atlanta." I go, "Why am I going to Atlanta? It's hot." She goes, "You booked four episodes on Tulsa King." Oh, I'm going to Atlanta. And there I was with Mr. Stallone and Taylor Sheridan, Terry Winner, Craig Ziss, Kevin Dowling, and the rest of the most incredible producers, writers, directors on the show. At season two, I pray there's a season three because I think we're coming back as far as the storyline is concerned. I don't want to give anything away. What an incredible experience I had. I got a chance to work with longtime friend Rick Pasqualone. He's from New York, and I showed up on set, and there he was, and big hugs, and, you know, he's part of my crew. I guess I could say this. I play a character called Sally Dogs, and part of a crew, you know, and work with Frank Grillo. He's my, I'm not going to give it away, but work with Frank Grillo, incredible actor. When it was our close-ups, he was right there for us. You know, he was just sitting there promoting us and encouraging us. And, you know, he's been around a long time and he's an incredible actor and he's very giving. So I had a great summer.
Well, you've definitely put in the work. I know you work hard at it. You work hard at acting, and you know, and it's definitely, of all the things you do, you have a real passion and love for it, and that's why, you know, you're able to keep moving, man. But you know, the other thing I'm going to add, and then I want to show something else we worked on, but those two words in the beginning that Sam wrote for you, genial and gregarious. You know, I would add another G word to that, and is generous. I mean, you're just, you know, you're really truly somebody who is such a generous person. You have such a generous heart. You're always taking care of people everywhere you go. And just like, you know, besides your managers and agents, just anybody, you know, in any environment, you just got such a generous heart. So, you know, so you got three G words, man. You're a triple G, brother. You're a triple G, man.
Well, I got a G word for you. God bless you, John. Thank you. I love you.
Thank you, brother. Love you too, man. Well, we recently got a chance to, you know, play a small role during COVID in helping be part of a movie that we were really proud that and is in the theaters and is a great movie. And that's the movie right here. And this is pictures at the Chinese Man Theater right there. And then, of course, this is the picture of the actual thing of the day of the blue red carpet opening. So we both played a role, you both in transportation on that movie, which is normal for you. That's another thing you do. You're a Teamster gang boss. But for me, I became a cast driver of Dennis Quaid and Penelope Ann Miller, drove them up to the Reagan Ranch every morning. And what a great experience, man. It wasn't my normal thing to do, but it was one of the best experiences I've had in life. Just, you know, being on the Reagan Ranch and hanging with them and hanging with all the people who are making that movie. Another great experience that we had together.
Well, yeah, you were great. It was great to have you. I was the transportation captain on that movie for John Sullivan, an incredible line producer and a dear friend of ours. Needless I say, a patriot, just an incredible human being and a Christian. And he had his kids working on the show. And there we were up in Goleta on the ranch that Reagan walked and rode his horse. And we were walked in his living room and I'm looking around, you're looking around. And we're like, Ronald Reagan lived here. And it was, they used to fly him in on a helicopter because it was an hour up, if you remember.
Oh, it was the scariest days of my life. I thought
we had to bring trailers up there, let alone just a car, but the roads were this big.
Oh, I don't know how you did it, man. Driving an SUV up there with the Dennis Quaid and Penelope, I was like, okay, I'm going to become famous for the guy who killed them. Cause I'm going off this road, man. I was so sure I was going off this road.
And let's face it. If you went off, you were going far.
100%.
It was a long way down.
Oh yeah.
You could see the ocean from up on top of the hill. You see,
I know. And we were driving in the fog and you guys, you know, driving those trucks up there. I don't know how you did it. I mean,
brother, I have to say, if there's any Teamsters watching, we're Teamsters strong. I love all the unions. I'm in DGA. I'm in SAG. I'm in local 399, gang boss, coordinator, producer. I'm sorry, captain. And my Teamster brothers and sisters are the elite of the elite. I know them in New York. I know them in LA. I know them across up in Canada. So I know Teamsters in a lot of places. And things don't happen unless the Teamsters make it happen. And IATSE, too. I have to take my hat off to that union. They're incredible. We have a big strike going on right now in our country. The longshoremen, you know, the people that unload the ships with all the goods so the truckers, the Teamsters could bring it across the country. And I hope they resolve that soon because union workers, men and women, the hardest workers, they built this country. And we have to support them. But I have a funny story about you and your driving skills, if you don't mind saying it.
Dude, I'm going to write a book one day called Fake Stories of James Quattrochi. I got so many stories.
It's not the fake news. This is true.
This is the fake news. Go ahead. Tell the audience another breaking fake news story.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So I'm on set with John Sullivan, the you know, line producer of the movie. And I'm standing right next to John and we're talking and here comes Duffy with the SUV and he comes in, he makes a turn and he runs over a pop tent. And Sullivan looks at me and I look at Sullivan and I say, put it on our tab. Needless to say, we had to throw the prop tent away. It was all bent like a pretzel. But you only killed one pop tent. And by the way, John, there's a saying in the industry, the people that know you, you never met a curb you didn't love.
Lock your door. This guy's coming for you. Oh, man.
Oh, boy. But I got tears, man.
And then, of course, you know, besides that, we also have another great group of people that we work with that I'm going to throw up their picture and we're going to tell some stories about this.
Oh, look at those guys. Go Yankees.
Go Yankees. And this is what we call the four mooks. And that's Martin Gigi, director, music producer, incredible human being. And we're going to be doing some projects with him coming up at Warner Brothers and his company, Sunset Entertainment. And then, of course, Nick Stellati is one of our buddies. He was my manager in Jack Lane, Mr. Bodybuilder and everything. But, you know, the four of us, you know, two Italians, an Irish guy and an Argentinian Jewish guy. What a group, man. What a group.
Martin Gigi, writer, producer of film, music, TV, everything. There's one thing I always admired. I've done five or six projects with Martin now, and you have done several. and we're involved up at Sunset now, thanks to he and his wife, Dahlia, who we love. And his kids are so talented, man. They have the Gigi family band, man. Amazing. Dahlia's in a play at the Whitmore Theater, which we're going to go on October 12th. Martine, that's Nick Stellati and I on 911 with Charlie Sheen.
And Charlie Sheen. That's right.
Yeah, that's Nick and I. That's when you met Nick after all those years on that set. I remember when you came to set. But so shout out to Martine and Dahlia. They constantly work with their family and friends. They actually look for projects, and then they call all their families and friends, and they say, come on, let's work with us. And I think that's a testament to them, but it's also a testament to the people that love them, like you and I, and we work so hard for them. And we bring them into budget, and they trust us. And so it was great having a meeting with you on Monday. It was great. I know him, but you got to meet the guy, I won't mention the name, whose life story we're going to do, which I saw the full documentary, and it blew me away the other night. Mm. And it's going to be an incredible movie, and I pray that gets done because it's powerful. And it was great being in a meeting with you and everybody else and meeting the rest of the new team that they brought in, and we're going to kill it.
Yeah, and that story, which not going to talk about, but it's a true story, and I love true story movies, but it's a true story about someone who is courageous, brave, has character, is all the good things in life. And, you know, to be able to be involved in a story about one of the good people, you know, making a difference. I love it, man. I love it that we're the team that's going to be part to help make that story. So, yeah.
Yeah, he was a decorated Vietnam War hero, Purple Heart, comes back, and basically the government, you know, throws him under the bus. So,
yeah. It's a very powerful story. We still have a little bit of time, but I also want, there's so many parts to you. One, I got to share a part of you because this is you on so many levels, and it's so cool. And this is,
did you go through my Instagram? Where are you getting all these pictures, bro?
The FBI. It's
like James Quattrochi, this is your life.
The FBI sends me these pictures, man. You know, they've been watching you for a long time.
Yeah. You know what that stands for, right? The FBI?
Yes. Go ahead.
What? Tell me.
Something about following.
Let me do it. You're going to ruin it. Forever bothering Italians.
That's it. Now, here is this, your dog, incredible. I think you're using your dog here to write your script. That's what I think. But
She had just, in that picture, she had just come out of the shower. I gave her a bath, so I covered her with a towel to keep her warm and dry her off. She hates the blow dryer, so I do it for a little bit, and she runs away. She's right now locked in my bedroom because she would be jumping all over the place, and she would want to be on TV. That's her.
Yeah, she is one of the prettiest dogs, obviously – That's the biggest problem for James when he leaves. He has to leave his dog, man.
But it sucks. You dog lovers out there, my dog's my best friend. I mean, she sleeps in my bed every night. She wakes me up in the morning. We go for hikes. She's everything. My ex-wife, Tracy, bless her heart, she bought Harley for me for Christmas. And I made sure Harley was in a divorce decree with my lawyer. So I got the dog. That's a $140,000 dog, by the way. That's what it cost me.
Well, you definitely take care of that dog, man. Let me tell you. You know,
I love dogs, and all you dog lovers out there, you know, they're your best. They are. They're man's best friend.
But, you know, before we move into some of the stuff you may have coming up in the future, besides the ones that we're working together on, you know, another part of you, you know, just reveals who you are, I think. And, you know, is that you have a strong faith. You know, I've gone to church with you up in your church up in the valley. And, you know, that's another part of who you are. And I just, you know, I think for people to know you, you know, you have, it's just your character, you know, everything about your character.
Well, you know, there's been a few people since I moved out have really helped me. You're one. A mutual friend of ours, Mike Torsha, who, you know, I know from New York. I met him when
you have to have him on the podcast in the future, right? For sure.
I met him. I think I was 16 in the YMCA. He was Mr. California, Mr. Junior USA, a very well-known bodybuilder in New York, kind of famous. And he took me under his wing and showed me how to work out. I still work out. He introduced me to Joe Mantegna. He introduced me to Jimmy Honore, who ran Sony Pictures, who helped me so many times. Mike's been a guardian angel. Nick Vallelonga. Nick from Green Book, but Nick and I have made four movies before, and we have That's Amore now up at Warner Brothers with Martine and Dahlia, and John Travolta, Chris Walken, Dan Aykroyd, Katherine Heigl, big cast. And as far as the church, I'm born Roman Catholic. I love, you know, I go to St. Charles, St. Francis, but I found another church out here called Grace Community Church, started by John MacArthur 56 years ago. And there's three services on Sunday. 10,000 people go through there every Sunday. They have an orchestra, they have a choir, and the message is so strong. And when I leave there on Sunday, it starts at 11, I leave at 12:30, it's an hour and a half service. I just feel like there's nothing I can't do, you know, in the upcoming week. And son of a gun, man, every time I go to that church that week, something great happens to me. And wow. I'm telling you that from my heart. And I brought you there.
Uh-huh.
We were blessed. I introduced you to Mike. We had Christmas Eve dinner together up at Angelino's, one of my favorite Italian restaurants here in the Valley. And it was great. Always great breaking bread with you and my close friends.
Well, it's always a special thing, and that was a special night with you. And, you know, I'm going to throw this thing up, and then we're going to talk about some of the other projects you got. But I think this kind of sums up a little bit of what we've gone through occasionally on films, and you inviting me to restaurants like that, and that is this.
When I read it, I feel sorry for the people who don't drink, because when they wake up in the morning, that's as good as it's going to feel all day. And that is so true. That's Dean Martin. I love Dean Martin. My favorite crooner. I mean, I've heard Bocelli. He's incredible. I've seen Frank Sinatra in concert. And I saw Tony Bennett. I love Tony Bennett. Harry Connick Jr., you name it. Dean Martin was just so handsome and so charming. He had that olive oil voice.
But you just triggered two stories I got to tell about you. You know, one is when we're up in Canada, particularly, we'd always go out to restaurants. You know, you ran a bar and a club. You know your wine. You're Italian, right? And, you know, you would get these great bottles of wine, and then you would get, you know, have me, and you say, what do you think about that? And I'd be like, it tastes like wine. And you'd be like, I'm going to freaking kill you.
Well, the other thing you do is you guzzle it. You're supposed to.
So, and then
savor it.
That's the next story.
You're Irish. You shoot it like, you know, Jameson's. You just shoot it.
That's right. That's right. And then the next story goes back to your generosity, your incredible generosity, man. You know, we finished Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist, and you took me out, and you treated me, and you took me to a spa day, and you paid for all that. And then we went down to the bar, and we knew the bartender, who I think was from Jamaica, great guy. And we were just, and then you bought this top liquor that I think it was $250 a shot, you know.
So it was winter. We had finished Left Behind. The last day that we filmed, you and I was directing second unit stunts on a sled outdoor process trailer. You were in the van keeping warm with your hot chocolate. I had to take a shower for 2 hours to thaw out. It was 17 degrees below zero in the snow, but it looks incredible. So besides almost catching pneumonia, you and I went to a spa day.
I felt your pain. I felt your pain inside the warm trailer. I really did.
Wow. We had sauna, and then we had a pedicure, manicure. And I said, John, we're not done yet. What's next? We went downstairs. His name was DeVille. Remember?
That's
the
right.
Bartender,
right.
DeVille.
Yes,
nice in our hotel. We stayed at a beautiful hotel,
the Hilton. Yeah.
And I said, we want Louis the 13th cognac. Louis the 13th. And he heated it up in a snifter, and we just sipped it, and we had, you know, some cheese and salami, and it was snowing out, man. And I almost fell in love with you. I mean, it was so romantic.
I was gonna. Yeah, I messed with you because when he put it down, and it was a whole process. It was like what a performance, right? Of him
for $250 a snifter.
Oh man,
it's got to be a performance.
And then I was like, I said, so I swallow it, right? And you were like, I'm gonna kill you. Right? Of course, I wasn't gonna do that, but you know, it was like it was one of those days. And just once again, it just, that was a testimony, just another testimony to your generosity. But, you know, we had a great time throughout that whole experience, man. And thank you, brother. I really appreciate you, man, for everything. Really do. But now let's go. We got a few more minutes left. I want to get into some of the stuff you have going on. Future, I know you have a TV series.
Can I mention one lady we forgot to talk about? Crystal Snow up in Canada. Yes, please. We're involved in a project with her. She's one of the hardest working producers on the planet. A dear friend of yours, dear friend of mine. We love her. We love you, Crystal. Yes. We did not forget you. We mentioned your name. Thank you for all you
did. And she was at that bar with us one night as well. So we had,
And she found them.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a beautiful woman and definitely hardworking and
so smart. So talented. So smart.
100%. Well, that's the thing. You know, there's so many great people. We could do a show on all the great people we spent time with up there and met, you know. But I'm glad you definitely pointed out her, Crystal. So going forward, you got some other projects. You got a script that you wrote that you want to get made into a feature film. You've also had a TV series stuff. I don't know if you want to talk about any of that, but sure. You know, but if you want to, feel free to.
So I'm up for a couple of projects right now. I mean, I'm on The Family Business for Netflix, a recurring role. They're bringing me back season 6. I did season 5. I play a character called Rocco. You know, I just finished Tulsa King. It's airing now, Blue Bloods. I created Family Saga, which is a 1940s five family mob, prohibition ending, Vegas opening up, New York City corruption, mayor's office, police commissioner, and the five families, the mob families, all muscling for position. It's a beautiful story, and it's getting a lot of look at right now. And then I met some incredible men when I was doing a movie in Syracuse. They were called the Syracuse 8. And it was 8 African-American football players back in 68, 69, 70, when Robert F. Kennedy was shot. You had Woodstock, you had Kent University, you had racism everywhere. And they boycotted the football program because of racism. And it was a book written about them, and I met them, and I said, I want to tell your story. I want to make it into a movie. And so I worked very hard with them, and we wrote the screenplay, and we created the pitch deck, and my dream would be to have Denzel direct it. Mm. Denzel to direct it and play the character who's older, who narrates the movie. We see him in the beginning. We see him at the end. But he takes us back to his life back in 1968. These guys are 73, 74 now. We're family. We got so close. I mean, I Zoomed them for a year, you know, back and forth, writing, rewriting, and salt of the earth. And the one thing that they said to me when I asked, why did they do that? Why did you risk your NFL careers? And they all got blackballed from the NFL. And at least half of them could have turned pro. I mean, these were talented, young 19-year-old kids. And you know what they said at 19? They said to each other, we're going to keep doing this so others who come behind us will have a better chance to play.
Wow.
That's a story that needs to be told.
I'm
putting it out in the universe that Denzel and I meet soon or somebody contacts me, because I think he would be the one seriously to direct this movie. I saw him direct Fences. It's incredible.
He's also an incredible human being on every level besides being such an incredible talent. He's one of the best in the industry. On every level.
He's from Mount Vernon. He's from near where you and I are from.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anything else you want to close us out with? And then I'll close out the show. Anything else you want to share?
You need my address to send a check?
I was thinking you were going to send the check this direction. Did I misunderstand?
Hold on. Let me call my agent.
What do you need?
Oh, God. John, it's an honor to be on your show. I watch your show. What you do for humanity with your show. You know, the incredible people that you bring on your show. And the sun's getting real bright.
I know. It's blocking you out. It's just...
All right. There we go.
There you go.
All right. Continue. It's an amazing show, and we need more shows like this. I know who you are. I know your character. I know how much you give to the military and the veterans. And, you know, you and I, we join a meeting the first Wednesday of every month together, and we support people in our industry. And you know, you're one of the good guys, man. And it's an honor to know you. I love you like a brother, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man. And thank you that we went on these great journeys together. Every one of them has been a blast. And I look forward to many more journeys together with you on more projects in the future. And hopefully, you know, I get to work on the one Syracuse 8 as well. And, you know,
I wouldn't do it without you.
I love it, brother. Well, thank you. Thank you for being part of it. And thank you for doing what you do. And once again, thank you for being such a generous person who I know makes a difference in people's lives. So thank you very much. I appreciate it, brother.
God bless.
God bless you as well. Yeah. And then I'm going to close out the show. I'm going to put you back in the green room. All right, everybody. I hope today's show with James Quattrocci inspired you to pursue your dreams, never to give up and to live courageously. And you never know what you're going to accomplish and what you can do and how you can touch people. So if you haven't seen my previous 85 podcast shows with some of my amazing, courageous friends sharing their powerful stories of overcoming all odds and going on to live powerful lives and making a difference in the world, you can watch them on my website, which is live-courageously.com, or you can watch it on my YouTube channel, Live Courageously, and join me every Sunday at 6 p.m. for another courageous guest. And I encourage you to choose to live courageously, make your life a masterpiece, and God bless you until we meet next week.